Welcome to Gemara Markings. Today's shiur is Chulin Daf Kuf Chof Zayin. Don't forget to click on the Daf option in order to view a marked Daf Gemara for today's shiur. If you're not fully familiar with our Gemara marking system and wish to benefit from its great rewards, it is essential that you study all of the introductory material accessed by clicking on the Learn the System option provided on the sidebar of our home page. If you are already partially familiar, you will benefit by clicking on the brief 4-minute introduction that is available here. Being that our system is a visual approach to the Daf Gemara, it is recommended that you print out the Daf before the Shiur. And even better, order your personal volume of this Maseches. Our address is gmarkings@gmail.com. Today's shiur begins 4 lines before the wide lines on Kuf Chof Zayin. You will notice a framed section of Gemara. In our Gemara markings, framed sections represent Tanaic sources. Before continuing in the Gemara itself, let us point out one of the features of the Shas Ozer, the cornerstone of Gemara markings, and that is titles and structural notes that we assign to each sugya as is appropriate. In this case, we have under our title the Nosei, in the outside margin, we've written Niflois Habria. We will see a description of unusual creatures mentioned in this source, and how the Kodesh Baruch Hu created the world in a very balanced way, where what applies to what is beneficial to one creature could actually be very injurious to the next creature. And this is something that aroused Rabbi Akiva's amazement. Let us turn now to the Gemara. Tana Rabbanan, Hatsov Leminehu. This is a posuk in the context of Shrotzim that are featured in the Gemara. And this is coming to include the expression Leminehu, Lahavi Ho Arvad, V'chein Hanefilim V'Salamandra. These are different kinds of creatures that are included in the realm of Shrotzim. These are Shrotzim that when they are dead, they communicate Tumas Sheretz. The Rashi explains that the Arvad is a creature that comes from the union of a Tzav and a Nochosh. For those of you who are new to the Gemara markings Daf Yomi Shiurim, we have pointed out in the past that when it comes to creatures and plants in the Gemara, that we don't have a strong Masorah on, a strong tradition on how to translate them, so we don't engage in translating these items, these animals and plants. So in this case, we'll just leave the explanation of Arvad as the union of Eitzav and Nochosh. The Nephilim is a type of Sheretz, and the Rashi says it's in the category of a Tzav, as of course the Gemara itself suggested. Salamandra, this is a creature that forms in the fire as a result of the burning of Hadas branches. And Rashi says that it comes about through the fire, Hadas branches, and some form of magic, Kshofim. And it's pointed out that if one takes the salamandra creature and extracts its blood, it acts as a fire retardant. And Rabbi Kiva happened to have a tradition that this is a type of tzav. So our Gemara continues. Ukshoya Rabbi Kiva magia leposuk zeh. When Rabbi Kiva would learn this posuk hatzav lemineu omer, he would react ma rabu maasecha Hashem. How wondrous are your actions, your creatures. The Rabbi Kiva went on to say, and we have a triangle that highlights the beginning of two phrases that will follow in the source, featuring this unique aspect of the Bria, of the creations. Yesh l'cha Brios gedolos b'yam, v'yesh l'cha Brios gedolos b'yabosha. This triangle introduces creatures in terms of location. The next triangle will introduce creatures in terms of their source of creation. So the first triangle introduces, we say, place. In other words, there are creatures that grow in the sea or develop in the sea, and there are creatures that develop on dry land. Shebayam, those that grow on the dry land, ilmole oilois biabosha, let's correct ourselves, those shebayam that develop in the sea, ilmole oilois biabosha, if they would go onto dry land, miad mesos, they would immediately die. Shebayabosha, those creatures that are land-based creatures, ilmole yordos liyam miyad mesos. As soon as they enter the water, they die immediately. This statement may be a reference to very specific large land creatures and large sea creatures, not necessarily a statement regarding all land creatures, because as we know, there are many land creatures that swim and dwell in the water large amounts of time. But this observation of Rabbi Akiva suggests that they will die rather immediately. Yesh l'cha brios gedelos ba'ur. There are creatures that grow in the fire. V'yesh l'cha brios gedolos. Yesh l'cha brios gedelos ba'avir. And you have creatures that develop in the air. Sheba'ur, those that come from the fire. Ilmole oilois la'avir. If they would leave the fire, enter the atmosphere. So miad mesos, they immediately would die. Sheba'avir, and those that develop in the atmosphere. Ilmole yordos l'ur. If they were to enter the fire, miad mesos. Ma rabu masecho Hashem. This phenomenon of creatures being restricted to their respective environments was something that seemed to arouse the wonder of Rabbi Akiva. Tanu Rabbanan, kol shiyesh biabosha yesh bayam chutz min hachulda. Everything that you find in the sea, there is, or you find on dry land, there is an equivalent of it in the sea, with the exception of the creature called Chulda. Omar Rabbi Zera, my craw, what is the pasuk that suggests that the Chulda is limited to the dry land, and in other words, that it doesn't have a parallel in the sea? The pasuk says, Ha'azinu kol yoshvei choled. Rashi addresses this, and says, Yoshvei choled, yoshvei ha'oretz. The word choled is a reference to the dry, to the yabosha, to the dry land. Shehu mokum yushav l'chudos. Apparently the dry land gets its name or is associated with this creature insofar as this creature is limited to the dry land and it doesn't have a sea equivalent. Omar Rav Huna, Breda Rav Yeshua, Bevri denarash einon min hayishuv. Bevri denarish is the name of a creature. It has it says, Eino min ayushuv. Rashi says that they develop, or they grow in the water. This creature has an interesting similarity to the English word beaver. And Rashi introduces a French word also in explaining this creature. So maybe there's something to it. As we know, the beaver, in fact, is a water-oriented creature. Nevertheless, as we said before, we're not here to engage in translations of these things. Omar of Papa. Now, since Narish was mentioned, Narish is the name of a place. So the Gemara goes on referring to different aspects of this place. And Rav Papa says, Bishamto Narish. Bishamto is excommunication. But it's a type of curse, if you will, the people of Narish. Tarbe mashche ve al yisei. Now here, if we translate the words, you come out with the fats, the skin, and the alya. The alya in the Gemara elsewhere is a reference to the fat tail of a sheep. But the translation here is of little significance when Rashi himself says that what he's trying to say is that all of Naresh, all aspects, all the people of Naresh, the Kekoton Kegodol, all of them, should be excommunicated. Meaning that they are all, as Rashi says, they are all Rishoyim. Eretz, 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 Shimi Devar Hashem. Omar Rav Papa. And again, another comment of Rav Papa, Lo Ova Naresh Shmoa Devar Hashem. The people of Naresh don't listen to the word of the Almighty. And on this Rashi says, Lefisha Kulon Hoyu Rishoyim. Apparently a community, a town of evil, of wicked people. That their wickedness is, of course, an outgrowth of their not listening to the Devar Hashem. Omar Rav Gidol, Omar Rav. You can see that we have a series of double underlines. On the side of the Gemara, we've put under our Nosei Mivneh heading, topic and structural note combined, Mekomos Shemuchsuk Bahen Rishayim. It's a reference to places that the populations of these places were known to be wicked. Narsha Nashkech Moni Kochech. If a person from Narsha were to kiss you, it's suggested that you should count your teeth. Namely, these people are known as thieves. They are so involved with thievery to the extent that if, as he says, if they were to kiss you, you should make sure that you still have all of your teeth. Nahar Pekoido Lavyoch. If a person from Nahar Pekod, another place, if a person from this place, Nahar Pekod, would accompany you, Miglimo Shapira de Chazi Aloch, his motivation for accompanying you on the street, on the road, is because of your fine clothing that he has set his eyes upon. Pupadisa Lavyoch, if someone from Pupadisa accompanies you, Ashni Ushpizach, you should tell him that your destination is something other than where you really intend to go. Rashi explains that he should not know where you are spending the evening, because these people are thieves, and if they know where you're going, that'll give them an opportunity to plan a theft from you. So if you find that a person from Pupadisa comes to accompany you, just change your destination in terms of don't let him know where you are going to be spending the night. Omar Rav Huna bar Turta, pam achas halachti levad. There was an occasion that I went to the Vad. Rashi says, Mokom Rishoyim Umar B.A. Kilayim, a place that they engaged in crossbreeding different creatures. The Ra'isi, and when I was there, I saw Nochosh Shukoruch al Hatsav. I saw a Nochosh, often explained or translated as a snake, that was wrapped around, was constantly together with a Tsav. And this togetherness seems to indicate some type of copulation. Liyomim yotza arvad mi beinehem. There was a birth of an offspring, and the offspring, the name or the creature that came forth from this is called arvad. Ukshabasi lifnei Rabbi Shimon HaChosid Omar li. And when I came and told Rabbi Shimon HaChosid about this, he told me, Omar HaKadosh Baruch Hu, Heim Heviu Brio Shelo Barasi Bolami. They were engaged in Kilayim, in crossbreeding, and thereby resulting in producing a creature that I did not create. Afani Ovi Aleim Brio Shelo Barasi Bolami. I will therefore cause there to arise upon them a creature that I did not create at the time of creation. And it's known, as Rashi says, that the Arvad is a very dangerous creature. It bites people and causes their death. So, sort of as a form of punishment, they created something that was not part of the Kodesh Baruch Hu's original plan. So they will be punished by having this creature in their midst that will pose a threat to them. The Gemara asks, on a technical basis, how could it be that the Tzav could unite with a nochosh and produce an offspring. But it has been taught, kol shetashmishon v'iburon shoveh, yoldin umegadlin ze mizeh. All those animals that copulate in a similar direction. So, similar direction, let's say they face to face or posterior to posterior, and their gestation period are the same. So they could produce through cross, even though crossbreeding is something forbidden, but a resultant creature could come about. That's Yoldin and Megadlin, and they can actually nurse one another. Megadlin zet mizet. So that if you have a donkey and a horse uniting, so they produce a mule. V'chol she'ein tashmishan v'iburon shoveh. However, two creatures that their form of copulation and their gestation periods are different, ein yoldin u'megadlin zeh mizeh, and we know that the nochosh has no parallel amongst other creatures in this in these areas. So how could it be that the tzav, which is very different from the nochosh in these aspects, how could they unite and produce an offspring? Omar Rav. So Rav answers, Neis besoch neis. What happened here is there was a double miracle that took place. The double miracle being that they in fact don't have similar characteristics as we mentioned before, and also that the nochosh abandoned its own kind and went for another kind of creature. That is what happened here. The Gemara asks, why? How can you term it a double miracle? Haipur anusahu. This was in fact the case of this arvod was a form of punishment. So the Gemara explains, my nes besoch nes lepur anus. It was a double miracle for the purpose of rendering retribution or punishment. The Shitakum Mikubetsis at the bottom of the page in Ois Yud Beis points out what we said, that when the Gemara asked, when the Gemara answered this was a nes besoch nes, the Gemara had been responding to a question that you can see at the bottom line, v'heich yotzoisa arvid mitzavu minochosh. How could an arvid be produced from the union of a tzav and nochosh? So the Gemara had answered neis besoch neis, and here he explains, chado de'i nami tashmishan shoveh. One aspect of a miracle is that even if their characteristics had been the same, it's a wondrous act that the nochosh abandoned its own kind and opted for a tzav, which is a different variety of creature. The ode, Shein Yoldin Zemizeh, and the second miracle is that being that they are different, they should not be able to reproduce. Nevertheless, this was what happened. The Gemara at this point introduces a new Mishnah, but before we learn the Mishnah, we have a topic heading, a nosei that's noted on the outside margin. Aver ubosar hameduldolin, a limb, or a flap of meat that's pretty much disconnected, but it's dangling, meduldolin, dangling from the animal. So you have a limb or flesh that's been for the most part cut away or disconnected from the animal, but it still remains dangling by a fine thread. And this sugya will be talking about the Eivu Bosom Gedolin, the Gabi Tumas Oichlin, the Tumas Nevela. The dangling limb. Now, it should be emphasized that the dangling limb is not something that one will be allowed to eat. Even if it goes through a proper, even if the basic animal goes through a proper shechita, the limb is not going to be mutter for a Jew to eat. However, the idea that's raised here is, let us say someone intended for this limb to serve as food for a goy, for a non-Jew. Would this plan, so to speak, make it such that it's considered oichlin and subject to tumas oichlin while still attached to the animal? So we're talking about the realm of tumas oichlin, tuma that when affects food, it makes the food tame, and then that food item would transmit or could communicate tuma to other food items. So what's unique about this this Mishnah, the Sukkia, is that we're going to be talking about Tumas Oichlin B'Mekoman while it's still attached to the animal. Generally speaking, live animals are not Mekabel Tumo. But here, we're talking about the Eiver HaMeduldo and raising the possibility of it becoming Tome Tumas Oichlin. Another issue will be regarding Tumas Nevela. Now, Nevela is a form of tuma that's well known in the realm of an animal that dropped dead. There's also the realm of Eiver Minachai. That's a limb that has been completely removed from, ripped off a live animal, a complete limb that's been removed from a live animal. A limb is defined as something that has bone, meat, and sinews in it, as opposed to just a hunk of flesh. A hunk of flesh ripped off a live animal, though is forbidden to eat, it doesn't convey any tuma. But a limb, an aver minachai, does communicate tuma, tumas nevela. What about a limb that's dangling from an animal? Let us now turn to the Mishnah. Ho'aver va'bosar ha'meduldolin b'vehema, a limb or flesh or meat that's dangling from an animal, mitamen tumas oichlin b'mekomon. They are subject to tumas oichlin where they are. Let us learn the Rashi, four lines from the bottom. Bimakoimon, the limb in its place, while it's still attached and dangling. Afalpi shehein mechuborim, even though the limb is technically attached to the animal. Im chishev alehin lahachil lovi kochavim, havi oichel lekabotumo. If he plans to serve this limb to a Gentile, it is then considered food insofar as being able to absorb tuma and transfer tuma to other food items. The tumas atzmon ein bohen at shiit l'shu kulon. As far as they're having themselves their own tuma, because what Rashi said is that they can absorb tuma in order to transfer it to something else. They can serve as a conduit of tuma, so to speak. But as far as their own tuma, this doesn't come about until they are detached, completely detached. Kidi alfino begemara. Avol mekablin tuma min hasheretz umetamin bo es achirim. A very interesting phenomenon. A quasi-state of tumah, where they absorb tumah to the extent of being able to transfer or to metamas something else that comes into contact with them. So our Mishnah goes on and says, Utsrichin hechsher, they require hechsher. Hechsher, for those who are not familiar, we can explain that in general, food items will not mekabel tuma unless they were exposed to certain types of liquids. The most common possibility is water. After having been exposed to water, rinsed off, if you will, then it's said to be mukhshir. It's now ready to mekabel tuma. So the dangling limb that we're talking about, we're saying that it will have to have been exposed at some point to water, and then it's susceptible to receiving tuma, to absorbing tuma, as we just described. Nishchata habehema, this animal with the dangling limb, let us say, has now been shechted, has been slaughtered. Huchshuru b'domeo divrei Rabbi Meir. We spoke about Hechsher a moment ago, so the slaughtering of the animal, according to Rabbi Meir, will serve as the means of Hechsher, the Hechsher being through the blood of the Shechita. Rashi at the top adds additional information. Nishchot ha-behema, nitaru mi-letame od mishum nevela. This limb will now no longer be a possibility of tumas nevela, of communicating the tumas nevela. This, by the way, is in contrast with a limb that was totally separated from a living animal. That's called Eiver Menachai, and that would communicate Tumas Nevela. However, we are talking about a dangling limb of an animal that has now been shechted. The Shechita will prevent Tumas Nevela from setting in. Even though the dangling limb, in this case, even though it was part of a slaughtered animal, is forbidden to eat. As we learned earlier in this Masechta, based on that pasuk, nevertheless, even though it's forbidden to eat, it's considered purified or excluded from Tumas Nevela. The Ein Shechita Yisenipol, the act of slaughtering does not constitute a disconnection. In other words, the limb is viewed as being connected all through the Shechita of the animal. And as a result of that, the shechita that you do to the animal has this nevela preemption effect on the limb that was dangling. And according to Rabbi Meir, who is at odds with Rabbi Shimon on this point, according to Rabbi Meir, the shechita also serves as the hechsher, enabling it to be susceptible to kabbalas tuma. The Mishnah continues, Rabbi Shimon Omer lo hechsheru. This will be a major topic in the Gemara, what is the basis of this machlokas, but that's a little later. Mesa habehema, the animal with the dangling limb, let us say, it wasn't shechted, but it drops dead. Habosar tzorech hechsher, the flesh that was dangling, in order for it to be metameh, it would have to have hechsher. It would have to receive, be exposed to water. Now, this is explained by Rashi. Meisa beimo, habosar shenedalda. Rashi says, "Sor hechsher kabotuma min hasheretz im lo hechsher mishenedalda." It requires hechsher for it to absorb tuma from a sheretz if it wasn't exposed to hechsher from the point that it became became dangling. The tumas nevela ein bo, there is no tumas nevela on this dangling meat. Why? Well, even though the animal itself dropped dead with the dangling meat, the animal itself, of course, is a nevela, but not the dangling meat. Why not? The misa oisa nipol. At the point the animal dies, there is a disconnection that takes place in legal terms, a legal disconnection. The eino kemisnabel imo b'misasin. It's not as if the flesh became nevela together with the death of the animal. Elo kevporush mechayim. But rather, it's like a hunk of flesh that got detached while the animal was still alive. Ubosa purish minachai tohor. And the rule says that meat, as opposed to a complete limb, meat that gets disconnected from a living animal is tohor, is not mitama. So it's not mitama. Therefore, in order for us to talk about this meat as being associated with tuma, it would have to become muhshor lekabel tuma. The Mishnah continues, Ha'ever mitame mishum ever menachai, the limb of a dangling animal that was dangling on an animal that dropped dead. We just got finished saying in the Rashi that Misa Oysanipol, that the death of the animal causes a disconnection. So we are, when you're dealing with a limb, the limb is then said to be disconnected from it while it was still alive. that's Eivor Min HaChai, and as such, it communicates Tuma. It has Nevela status. However, it's not a real Nevela. It's rather called Eivor Min HaChai. And there's a difference between Nevela and Eivor Min HaChai. The Gemara will deal with what's the difference between Eivor Min HaChai and Eivor from a Nevela. But as far as the categories are concerned, the Mishnah declares that the Eivor that was this dangling limb from an animal that dropped dead has the status of Eivor Min HaChai, V'eino Mitama Mishum Eivor Nevela, Divrei Rabbi Meir. Rabbi Shimon Mitahir. And Rabbi Shimon declares it Tohor. And what he means will be also explained later in the Gemara. The Gemara opens up with an inference or a diuk from the beginning of the Mishnah. We have a little star indicating to look at Omid Aleph, and that draws your attention to the bottom line, where the Mishnah had mentioned that the Eivor and Bosom B'Dolim are Metam and Tumas Oichlin B'Mekomon. The Gemara says Tumas Oichlin in Tumas Nevela Lo. The dangling limb is subject to Tumas Oichlin, but it's not considered Nevela. In other words, it's not considered totally detached, because if it were, it would have the status of Eivor Min HaChai, and an Eivor Min HaChai does communicate Tumas Nevela. It's a special category, but for our purposes, we'll call it for right now Tumas Nevela. So the Mishnah is Medayik. The Gemara is Medayik from the Mishnah that the dangling limb does not have Tumas Nevela associated with it. The Gemara asks, Hey Chidomi, well, what are the circumstances? What are the details? And before going on in the Gemara, we have our Nosei heading on the outside margin. We have written there, Eivor HaMeduldol Nechshav Mechuber, the dangling limb is considered attached, Bameh She'eino Metame Nevela, as witnessed by the fact that there is no Tumas Nevela. So it's considered attached, and a living animal is not metame. So it's, by virtue of the fact that it doesn't communicate Tumas Nevela, it must be that it's considered attached. Avol, on the other hand, tolush, it's considered disconnected, bezeshe metame Tumas Ochlin, by the virtue of the fact that it communicates Tumas Ochlin, food Tuma, which is not the case of something that's alive. So the dangling limb, which communicates Tumas Ochlin, therefore is considered detached with regard to this. That is by way of introduction. The Gemara wants to know the details. We're talking about this dangling limb, and you're telling me it has Tumas Ochlin, but yet not Tumas Nevela. Hey Chidomi, what are the circumstances? And the Gemara goes through stage by stage, trying to get to a conclusion. E de ma'alin aruka, if it's dangling but it could heal, afilu tumas ochlinami lo litmu, then since it has the potential of healing and becoming just fully attached and normal, then there shouldn't be even tumas ochlin. It should be viewed as just another limb of a living creature, which is not subject to tuma. The e de ein ma'alin aruka, if it is in a state of, it's a hopeless medical state, namely it will not ever get better, then Tumas Nevela Nami Litmu. Then if you're telling me it's never going to get better, so then why not say that it has Nevela status? It should be considered simply detached. Li'oilom di'ein ma'alin aruka. We will tell you that in fact it won't heal. The Mishnah is describing a limb that's detached so much so that it won't get better. The shiny Tumas Nevela, but the realm of Tumas Nevela is different. It's not dependent on the simple fact that it won't get better. The Rachmon Omar, the Torah says, Ki Yipoil. In the context of Tumas Nevela, it says, uses the expression, falling off. Ad She Yipoil. In other words, Tumas Nevela does not set in until it actually falls off, as opposed to being dangling. Tanya Nami Hachi, we have a Tanaic source that supports this. However, v'habosar hamedudolim b'vehemo u'meurin b'chut hasayra. a limb or flesh that's dangling from an animal and is me'urin, it's connected by a thread of hair, meaning just a very thin connection. Yochol yitamu tumas nevela, could it be that it will have tumas nevela? Tamud lomar yipoil. The Torah says yipoil ad shipoil. V'afilu hachi, but even so, tumas ochlin mitamu. They do present, they do produce tumas ochlin, or they do communicate tumas ochlin. The Rashi, you'll notice where we have a star. Rashi says v'afilu hachi tumas ochlin mitamu b'nichusa. This isn't a question, but rather it's a statement. Klomar v'afagav de mechuborin chashivi linyan tumas nevelos. Even though with regard to tumas nevelos, they are considered attached, namely no tumas nevela. It's considered attached. Kotoni masnisin linyan mas tumas ochlin tolushin inhu. Regarding tumas ochlin, they're viewed as detached. Umekablin tumo kishar ochlin, and will absorb tuma like other food items. The Gemara continues, Mesaye alei l'Ravchia bar Ashi. This supports Ravchia's teaching. The Amar Ravchia bar Ashi Amar Shmuel. Te'enim shetzamku be'evehen. Before going on in the Gemara, let's take advantage of our nosei that we find on the side, and we've indicated hemshech. This is a continuation of the sugya that we've just started, and we've written on the side, Dino shel Shmuel. The law or the teaching of Shmuel, peiros shetzamku be'ilon, fruits that have dried out while on a tree, nechshavim tlushin legabi tumas ochlin, they are viewed as detached with regard to tumas ochlin, which is quite reminiscent of the dangling limb, which is viewed as detached with regard to that realm. Avol mechuborin legabi Shabbos. Here we're dealing with a tree, and we're dealing with a tree. There's another aspect of halacha, the realm of Hilchus Shabbos, and on Hilchus Shabbos, one is forbidden on the Shabbos day to pull off fruit from a tree. What about pulling off dried fruit from a tree? Well, if you're telling me that it has the status of Tumas Ochlin, in other words, it could gain Tumas Ochlin, it would indicate to us that it's detached from the tree. If it's detached from the tree, then you might think that there's no problem in pulling it off from the tree on Shabbos. Once you're telling me that even though it's on the tree, it's Mekabel Tumas Ochlin, you're in effect saying it's detached. And yet we will see that it's forbidden to pull off a dried fruit from the tree. That would be a violation of Hilchus Shabbos. So that with regard to Hilchus Shabbos, we're considering it still attached. Similar to what we said before, that with regard to Tumas Nevela, we were saying the limb is still considered attached to the living animal, and hence there's no Tumas Nevela. It's just interesting to note, by the way, that the idea of still being considered attached in the realm of Tumas Nevela, it represents a leniency, and with regard to Hilchus Shabbos, it represents a stringency. But as is well known through learning, you develop a sense of developing a principle, and the application of the principle might have quite varying results from the application of the principle. So the Gemara feels that there is a parallel between the halachas we've described concerning the dangling limb and this halach concerning the dried fruits on the tree with regard to Tumas Ochlin and Hilchus Shabbos. And Shmuel says, we turn back to the Gemara, we see Shmuel's name has been encircled. There will be references made to Shmuel as we go on in the Gemara, hence we chose to mark him off thusly. So Shmuel says regarding the te'enim, the figs, shetzomku, that dried up be'evehen on the tree, 2 points. One, metamas tumas ochlin, and two, v'atulish men b'shabes chayev chatos, that they are subject to tumas ochlin, but one who detaches it, pulls it off from the tree, pulls off the dried fig from the tree on Shabbos, will be, if he does it inadvertently or unknowingly, he will be chayav a sin offering, indicating that this is a Shabbos violation. Rashi points out that the Shabbos violation will come to be provided that the stem to which the fig is attached to the tree, the stem itself is not dried out. Just the fruit is dry, but the stem is still fresh. Now, as we go on in the Gemara, we notice triangles. But if you skim down, you'll notice the triangles appear in two opposite directions. So this is explained under our Mivneh heading. In the outside margin, the triangle pointing up will be L'toivas Shmuel, will be an attempt to support Shmuel, and the triangle facing downwards will be against Shmuel. These triangles will be introducing Tanaic sources. Shmuel, being an Amora, we want to know, can we offer support to what he is saying, or possibly no? So the Gemara asks, Lema Misele, can we suggest, can we say that the following supports Shmuel? You'll notice that we have a shin that's encircled to the immediate right-hand side of the Gemara text with a descending vertical dashed line. We're trying to denote a long question. The question is, can we say that the following Tanaic source supports Shmuel? So all of the lines of Gemara that are opposite this descending vertical dashed line form this question. The thrust of the Gemara will be built upon an inference from the source. In other words, we're going to learn a source, but we're not going to see in the source itself the support to Shmuel, but rather from the inference that we will draw from the source. The source says, Yerokos shitsomku be'evehen, vegetables that dried up while attached to the plant they're growing from. Kagon ha'kruv v'dalas, these vegetables or like these, the kruv and delas, ein mitamen tumas oichlin. They will not communicate tumas oichlin because kruv and delas, when they are dry, they are like wood. Maybe some of you are familiar with dried out pumpkins and the benefit of that, they use them as vessels, but as far as eating is concerned, they are not suitable for that. So they're considered like wood, and hence the delas and kruv in a dried out state are not mitamen tumas ochlin. Kotsitson viovshon mitamen tumas ochlin. This last phrase is difficult to understand. The Gemara has in our bracketed section an attempt to explain that, but right after this short bracketed section, the Gemara then focuses on the inference. So if we skip the bracketed section, you see the Gemara says, Taimo de Kruva de Lashu, the Kiva de Yavshan. The reason that the Resha of the Mishnah says that there is no Tumas Ochon is because we're dealing with these specific food items, Kruva de Las. They are lav b'nei achila ninhu. They are just simply not edible. Hashar peros mitami. But other fruits in the same situation would communicate tumah. And it's from this inference, the shar peros inference, that we will be attempting to support Shmuel's teaching. We'll get back to that momentarily. Let's just go over the Gemara that we skipped in the brackets. The Brisa, this Tanaic source, had mentioned Kotsitsan v'yavshan metamtumas ochlin. If you detached the kruv and delas and dried them out, they will communicate tumas ochlin. But this is hard to understand. Kotsitsan v'yavshan salkadaitach. Could you think that that's what this is really talking about? Eitz be'almahu. It's no more than mere wood, meaning it's not edible. Dried kruv and delas is not food. The Omar Rabbi Yitzchak be'alminas liyabshan. The chiddush of this source is that you cut off the kruv and delas with the intent of drying it out. Right now it's still fresh. And the chiddush here is that even though you have an intent to dry it out, right now it's still subject to tumas ochlin. The Rashi in Dibur Masl Kotsutson, the lower part of the narrow lines, Rashi says Kotsutson Lachin, while they were still, you detached the kruv and delas while they were still fresh, Almanas Liavshin, with the intent of drying it out. Afal Pishein Oimdin Lamaichol Eloli Eitz, even though you are planning for it not to serve as food but for wood purposes, meaning vessel purposes, Kagon Delas, Lasus Menakli, Kruv Lahasoka, the Delas to make a vessel out of it, or the Kruv to serve as fuel. Afilu Ochi Kozman Shehein Lachin Mitamin, this is the main
point of the Seifa, that as long as it's still fresh, it's considered subject to Tumas Ochlin.
Okay, now the Gemara focuses on the source for its inference value. Taimo de Kruv de Las, who, the reason that there is no Tumas Ochlin is because we're dealing with a dried Kruv de Las, that when they dry out, lav b'nei achilu ninu, they're not edible. Ha shar peiros mitami. But other fruits in a situation like this, namely they're dried, yet still attached to the tree, they would be subject to tumas ochlin. Hey chidami, what are the circumstances of these dried fruits still attached? E di yavshin hein vuktsein. If the fruits and the stem are dried out, pshitol on it. Obvious that they're subject to Tumas Ochlin. It's the fact that it's dried and the stem is also dried. It's considered completely detached from the tree. Elolav below saying, rather, it must be like we described before, that the fruit is dry while the stem is not dry. And even so, it is considered Ochlin. But at the same time, we saw before Shmuel's teaching is that it's still considered attached. The Gabi Shabbos, this source is telling me, similar to Shmuel, that if the fruit itself is dried, even though the stem is not, it is subject to Tumas Ochlin. This would then support his Shmuel's teaching. The Gemara rejects this. Le'olam hein ve'uktzehen. The source is not describing the case Shmuel was dealing with, but it's describing a case where the fruit itself and the stem is dried out. And we said regarding that, that's obvious. Why would the source have to teach it at all? The answer to that is the kotzitzon amanas liyavshon itzri cholei. The Chiddush was the Seifa. I need that source for the Seifa. That's where the novel point, the interesting point of law was. As was explained above, you cut them off with the intent to dry them out, but as long as they're still fresh, there is Tumas Ochlin. Toshma. At this point you see the triangle is inverted, indicating to us that we are going to present material that will not be in support of Shmuel. Ilon shenifshach uboy perois harehen kitlushin. Rashi explains the case is nitlash mimenu anaf ubois anaf yesh peros. A branch became ripped off a tree, and on the branch there are fruits. Yavshu hare hein kemechuborin. If fruits of a tree that are on the tree, on a branch that has not become detached, so this is another case, fruits on a tree that are literally on the tree and not on a branch that became detached, it says in this source they are considered mechuborin. My love, what are we to understand with regard to this source? Ma tolushin l'chol divrein, just like in the case of something that's tolush. It's considered tolush across the boards regarding everything, regarding all possible matters. That would include Hilchos Shabbos, it's considered detached, and if you ripped it off the branch that was already cut off from the tree, so there's no Shabbos violation, and Legabi Tumas Ochlin, it would be considered Ochlin. It's not considered a fruit that's attached to a tree, which is not Mekabel Tumas Ochlin. So, Af Mechuborin L'chol Divrayim. So when it speaks about the dried fruit on a tree, it's considered Mechubor with regard to all aspects, whether regard to Shabbos, whether regard to Tumah. Now, Tumah in this case would mean it's not Mekabel Tumas Ochlin. So that point is unlike Shmuel. It would be against Shmuel. The Gemara answers, responds, as Midi Iria, who says that you make this parallel? Ha ki de Isa, the ha ki de Isa. with regard to the branch that's ripped off completely from the tree. So there we'll say it's considered tolush l'chol davar, completely detached. However, Hakati Isa, the Seifa that spoke about dried fruits on a tree, since that's considered completely attached, without, you know, an unqualified attachment, rather, it's considered attached with regard to Hilchus Shabbos, but not with regard to Tumas Ochlin. With regard to Tumas Ochlin, it would Mekabel Tuma, just like Shmuel taught. Nishchata HaBehemo, so the Mishnah said, Hukshiru B'Domeho Divrei Rabbi Meir, the animal with the dangling limb was slaughtered. So according to Rabbi Meir, the Shechita blood serves as the Hechsher, enabling the limb to Mekabel Tuma. And in other words, we spoke before about dangling limbs need hechsher, tzrichen hechsher. So the hechsher in this case would be the blood of the slaughtering. And Rav Shimon Omer lo hukshiru, the dangling limb that was part of an animal that was slaughtered is not hukshir through the slaughtering. B'mai, Komifli Gimor asks, what is the point of, or the underlying reason of this controversy between Rabbi Meir and Rabbi Shimon? Before going any further in the Gemara, we glance at the side. We notice we have a Nosei Mivneh heading, and the Mivneh indicates we are going to explain the structure, and in this case we feature a diamond. You'll notice that the diamond, though it's, we start a series of diamonds here on Kuf Chav Zayin with Beis, but they extend all the way down Kuf Chav Ches Omen Aleph. Then we've numbered quite a few of them. It appears there are about six of these. They are, as they're indicated on the side, Deos, Lahazmi Achlus, Rimeir, Rabbi Shimon, different opinions, Amoraic opinions, how to explain this Tanaic controversy when Rameir Shimon Beinyan Hachshoras Abraham Adudo LeKabotuma B'Shchitas Abehema, regarding this topic of the slaughtering of an animal with a dangling limb, is it considered a Hechsher LeKabotuma? And we continue now in the Gemara. Omar Rabba. Rabba explains what the point of Machlokis is. B'Vehema Nasis Yad LeEver Komifligi. Rashi explains that as far as Rav is concerned, in principle, Rabbi Meir and Rabbi Shimon will agree that there is something called Yad Lehechsher. Yad Lehechsher is something we've learned about in the past. It's a case where though the fruit or the food item itself wasn't exposed to the water that's necessary to create susceptibility for Kabbalah's Tumah, which we call Hechsher, but the handle, the Yad is a handle, but the term handle is a very broad term. It refers to the item, something extending from, that's attached to the food and extending from it, like a stem, or a bone, or something else. And in this case, the something else will be the behema. Does the behema, which is slaughtered, and the blood is on the animal, the blood isn't necessarily on the limb that's dangling. So the question is, does the behema serve as a yad to communicate the hechsher to the aver? So once again, in general, there's this concept that there's yad lehechsher. That would mean, let us say you have a fruit and it has a stem growing from it and the stem got wet. The wetness that affected the stem would be said to affect the fruit as well. Our question here is the behema viewed as the stem, is the behema to the dangling limb as a stem is to the fruit? The Gemara goes on. Mar Savar Ein Behemah Nasis Yad Lever. Rabbi Shimon, who said that it's not Mukhshar, he says that a behema cannot be viewed as a yad, as the extender of the dangling limb. It's a matter of perspective. You don't look at a behema as the handle to the dangling limb. Umar Savar Bimeir holds Behemah Nasis Yad Lever, that the behema is viewed as a yad with regard to the aver. And since the behema became had contact with the shechita blood, That's the Hechsher. The Hechsher transfers to the limb as well. Abaye Omar. Abaye has a different approach. He says that the Hesber of the Tanoim here is not a Yad Hesber. It's not based on Yad. And that's because everyone would agree that a behema is not a yad to the aver. You don't say that the entire animal is a yad to a singular limb. And yet we see that according to Rebbe Meir, there is hechsher. So he, Rabbi explains, "Be'oiches be'katan vein gadol oy le'imoy komifligi." The issue is, is the behema with its dangling limb a singular entity or not? In order to determine something as being a singular entity, Abaye presents the principle of, if while holding the smaller part, the larger part does not it doesn't get lifted up with it, in other words, snap apart, is it nevertheless considered a singular entity? So that is what Abaye says. They're arguing about this. Mor Sovar, Rabbi Meir holds. Now, Rabbi Meir is the one that said that it is a it, there is hechsher, and it's not a function of yad, but a function of viewing the dangling limb and the behema as one unit. So since he views it as one unit, it must be that Rabbi Meir is telling us that if you grab the limb, which is the small part of this setup, if you were to pick up the limb, it would snap off the behema. The behema is much heavier. Rabbi Meir holds that this phenomenon of it nevertheless is considered a singular entity. It's considered one thing. And therefore the shechita that was done with the blood is mashir the entire singular entity. Rabbi Shimon, on the other hand, says, listen, if you're going to pick up the animal by grabbing the limb, this dangling limb, you can't tell me it's a singular entity. It's going to snap off, and that's enough to make it such that even when it's attached, it's still not viewed as a singular entity. As you see, we have a bracketed section that extends from here down the upper part of Kuf Chof Ches Omen Aleph. The brackets here are not for the purpose of skipping, per se, because right after the brackets, you will see Shitas Rova, who is a new explanation for the Machlokes, Rebbe Meir, and Rebbe Shimon in the Mishnah. However, it's a self-contained unit. The section in the brackets is a self-contained discussion featuring Rebbe Yochanan with regard to this discussion of Oicheis Bekotten Ve'en Godol Oyla Imoy. So now, with that background, we look in the brackets. The Af Rabbi Yochanan Savar Oicheis Bekotten Ve'en Godol Imoy Komiflegi. Rabbi Yochanan also will hold that the Machlokes Tanoim concerns this topic. And that will mean that Rabbi Meir, as far as Rabbi Yochanan's concerned, Rabbi Yochanan's perception of Rabbi Meir is that Oiches Bekotten Ve'en Godol Oyla Imo is considered a singular entity. Now, how do we know that this is Rabbi Yochanan's approach to Rabbi Meir? The Rabbi Yochanan Rami, the Rabbi Meir, the Rabbi Yochanan raised a contradiction within two statements of Rabbi Meir. Me, Omar Rabbi Meir, Oichis Bekotten, the Ein Godol Olimo, Areu Kamo. Does Rabbi Meir really hold that way, that it's considered a singular entity, Viraminu? But we see something that would contradict this. This is a source, a Tanaic source, dealing with Truma and a Tvul Yom. A Tvul Yom is a person who needs to achieve Tara. He was Tomei, he went to Mikvah, and after going to the Mikvah, after immersing himself in the Mikvah, he has to wait for the sun to set. So after going to the Mikvah, before the sun goes down, he's called a Tvul Yom. As such, he has a Sheni Tuma status. He's called a Sheni Lutuma,
Sheni l'tuma, if he touches truma, he ruins the truma. He's metame truma. Sheni affects truma because truma is affected, can become a shlishi l'tuma. So a tvuyom will passel truma. That's by way of background. V'raminu, we have a Tanaic source. Oichel shenifras umura b'mitzas. We have some truma food that became separated but is still partially attached. So we have a piece of food, a fruit that was tithed as truma, and it's been, let's say, cut apart but is just slightly attached to the other half of the food item. Rabbi Meir Omer, im oiches bekotten v'godol oileimoi hareu kamo. If by picking up the smaller piece and the larger part will rise together with it, then it's considered one entity. And that the practical application of that would be that if a tvul yom touches the small part, the entire food item will become tome. The imlav, if by picking up the smaller part, it will snap off from the bigger part, then it's not considered one entity. And the fact that a tvuyom might touch the smaller part, it's not going to metama the rest of it. The Omar Rabbi Yochanan, and Rabbi Yochanan, in looking at this comment of Rabbi Meir, says, Mukhlefes Hashita, that here Rabbi Meir has switched around his normal approach to things. Namely, Rabbi Yochanan's normal approach is that Oiches Bekotten, the Ein Godol Oileimo, Hare hu kamo, it is considered one entity. So we see from the fact that Rabbi Yochanan, who is pointing out this inconsistency in Rabbi Meir, holds that Rabbi Meir's true shita with regard to oiches bekotten, the ein godol oilimo, where the larger part does not come together with the small part, where it would snap off, Rabbi Meir holds it is considered one unit. The Gemara asks, Umay Kushya, why does Rabbi Yochanan see any difficulty from this Truma case as opposing a contradiction to what Rabbi Meir said before in our Mishnah? Dilma Shani lay the Rabbi Meir bein Tvul Yom l'shar Tumos. Maybe Rabbi Meir makes a distinction between the realm of Tvul Yom being a point of Chumrah, if you will. Rashi explains that even though Tvul Yom is it could be that Rabbi Meir is mekil with regard to Tvul Yom, which Rashi here calls Chutuma de Rabbonan. That classification itself needs further explanation. The Rabbi Kiva Eger in the Gilyon Hashas points out that calling Tvul Yom a Tumah Derabbanan is Tamuali. Hod Tvul Yom Hu Tomei Doraisa, the Rabbi Kiva Eger says, Lifsol Truma Benegia. And he gives further sources to look into this particular Rashi, but for our purposes, in order to maintain the flow of the Gemara, we're just going to say that there's an approach here that suggests that maybe Tvul Yom is a weaker realm, a lower level of severity than other tumas, and therefore Rabbi Meir takes this approach that unless they could be picked up together, in other words, by picking up the small part, the large one comes with it, otherwise there won't be tuma communication or tuma transference. So maybe Rabbi Meir makes a distinction between Tvul Yom and other tumas. So to this the Gemara says, Tanya Rabbi Meir Omer, Rebbe Omer, not Rebbe Meir, it's Rebbe Omer, Echot Tvul Yom Vechot Shar Tumas, that there is no distinction. And if there's no distinction, so then we have a problem with Rebbe Meir. That if you make no distinction, so that whatever you say in other Tumas should apply to Tvul Yom as well. So the Gemara asks, well, V'domo L'Rebbe Lo Shani Le, L'Rebbe Meir Shani Le, maybe Rebbe doesn't make a distinction. Rebbe is Rebbe Yudan Nossi. He is a different personality than Rebbe Meir. Rebbe doesn't make a distinction, Rebbe Meir does make a distinction. And if Rebbe Meir makes a distinction, so then Rebbe Yochanan shouldn't have had any difficulty.
Omar Rabbi Yoshia, Hochi Omar Rabbi Yochanan. The true explanation of things is Ledivrei Rebbe Muchlefes Hashita. Looking at the Rashi, Ledivrei Rebbe, the low Shani lay, according to Rebbe, who makes no distinction. In other words, according to Rebbe, there is no difference between Tvul Yom and other Tumas. Well, Hechlif Rebbe Meir Shitasa, the Amar Kolecha, the Avya Negiya B'Tvul Yom, Avya Negiya B'Shar Tumas. That wherever, if you follow Rebbe's line through, then Rebbe Meir would seem to be contradicting himself. Because as far as Rebbe is concerned, however you view a connection with regard to Tvul Yom, that thusly you would view it with regard to other Tumas. But we've heard Rebbe Meir of our Mishnah to hold Yafagav the Ein Gadol Oyla Imo Chiburu, even if the large part is not going to move along with your picking up the small part, it is considered a chibur. So as far as Rebbe's outlook, there would be a contradiction with regard to Rebbe Meir's approach. But for our purposes, the role of this bracketed section was to show that Rebbe Yochanan is analyzing Rebbe Meir of our Mishnah the same way as Abaye analyzed. After this piece of Gemara, as you can see, there are more diamonds. The Gemara goes on with other opinions as to what the point of machlokas between Rebbe Meir and Rebbe Shimon in our Mishnah is. But with that, we conclude our shiur for today.